calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is bitten the dust. London calling. See, we ain't. Welcome again to College Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is David Holley. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match against Cardiff City on Saturday for Fulham. To help us with our preview, we have Alex Bywater from Wales Online to give us the Cardiff City perspective on the match. Alex should be joining us in about 30 minutes. We will also be discussing several Fulham-related subjects. We have a ton to get through. Before I bring on David, I just want to mention one thing. I actually made a recommendation to several people to basically check out the Facebook page for CottagersConfidential.com. It really is a great Facebook page. I'm affiliated with Cottagers Confidential. I actually wrote a few things on there this week, and also that's where I post the show as well. And I want to give a little shout out to my friend Ollie Hall, a young writer who actually really wants to get into writing, and he's actually posting some very interesting questions on CottagersConfidential.com Facebook page. So please do go on there. Actually, it's just Cottagers Confidential. And you will see some of the questions. You'll see all the articles. You'll see some of the articles I've written and the other great writers on that Facebook page. You know, and obviously also there's the Cottage Talk Facebook page where I post a ton of links to articles and questions as well for the audience, which I will be sharing with you guys, you know, some of your comments in a little bit. All right, enough of the pleasantries. Let me bring on David. David, how you doing, my friend?
Hi, Russ, and I had a funny story this morning. I went to a routine hospital appointment, and as you probably have in America, as we do here, you always have loads of copies of old magazines there. So there was an old copy of Hello, which is a kind of a... Do you have Hello over there as well?
We do.
Yeah, it's like all show busy. And there was just some guy who's apparently famous, but I've never heard of him, yeah? And there he was, posing completely naked, apart from his nether regions were covered by a massive selection of cheeses. And I thought to myself, Felix McGath has struck again, you know?
Oh, boy.
And I saw today, it was funny because obviously it tied in with the story that Felix is perhaps buying or has bought a 1% share in Rangers, which is...
Saw that, yep.
Which is almost... It's almost worth me bringing back my favourite saying of that's probably worth 4/5 of you know what, but I won't
yes,
say
I
it
know,
because
David.
I don't want to change it. But no, I almost, if I'd had time, I'd have actually probably photographed this magazine and tweeted it in just because it really touched me seeing. I don't know who this guy was, but I'm glad his nether regions were covered obviously by all these cheeses. But I think he bought a new, we won't go there actually, Russ. We're not going to go there, but yeah. So that was quite a funny thing for me anyway this morning.
Okay. David, I had no idea where you were going with this story, but as long as it didn't go anywhere X-rated, thank you for that. But very, very interesting story for you to share with all of us. All right, my friend, let's get going because we have about a half hour until Alex does join us, and I want to get through several subjects. So let's go into Cottage Talk Quick Shots, and I'm actually going to give you a bonus topic for us to discuss because there was breaking news today, David. You might have seen this. That Marcello Trotta has joined AS Avellino in Italy on a permanent deal. He is no longer a Fulham player. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I didn't know this, actually, because I've been away most of the day, but I'm not surprised at all by that, obviously. And I wish him the best. It's a shame. It's obviously a big shame that, you know, we never really got to see him in a Fulham shirt to see what he could do. But as we discussed before, he's been passed over by, you know, several managers. You know, and even with Kit there, and Kit must know him, of course, as well as any of them, probably better. And yet he still was nowhere near the first team. So I guess that kind of just, you know, for whatever reason, they just didn't rate him. They didn't think it would be up to it, even though he did prove that, you know, at a slightly lower level, he was quite prolific at times. It's funny because I think it was Mike, actually, or someone was discussing him before. It was made a parallel between him and Matt Smith, of course, who's been scoring for free will at the moment for Bristol City. So I wish Marcello all the best, and, you know, obviously it's his native Italy as well, which is probably good for him. He'll feel comfortable there, and I hope he does really well. But I think it was probably the right move because I just didn't see him getting near the team. You know, we have already Adam Taggart still to see. God knows if anyone will come in the transfer window. And of course, now Matt Smith has been scoring goals, there's been this massive hype to get him back playing for Fulham. Although, you know, if that does happen, there'll probably then be a massive hype saying, why are we playing long ball football suddenly? You can't win with that one. But,
right.
You know, it was a long way down, wasn't he, Marcello? So good luck to him. And let's hope that, you know, he gets some regular playing time, because I'm sure that's what any footballer wants at the end of the day. It's not about money or whatever. It's about playing regularly, I hope.
You know what, David? I wish him the best as well. You know, it wasn't going to happen for him at Fulham, so I think it's the best thing for everyone involved that he move on and go back to Italy. You know, best of luck to him. You know, I really hope he succeeds. It's funny because I remember going back, I want to say about 4 years ago, the two top names of players that I kept hearing so much, that, you know, youngsters that could make something, that were strikers. I don't know if you remember Danny Hosen, who at that time, you know, again, he ended up moving over to Ajax and now is with another team, I believe, in the Netherlands. And then, of course, Trotta. And Trotta had some success at the lower leagues. But for whatever reason, he never got an opportunity to really break in with the first team at Fulham. So I think this is the best thing for him. I do wish him, again, I'll say it one last time, best of luck, Marcel. And I hope you're a big success and obviously get a chance to play. All right, David, let's move on. And on Thursday, I saw this article by Paul Warburton, and honestly, Paul's writing some very good stuff on Get West London. He wrote that the beginning of the end for Fulham last season was the loss to Cardiff City, who Fulham played tomorrow. Do you agree with him? I know we've talked about, again, how far back the decay goes, but we're talking about the beginning of the end of that season. Was it there, or was it earlier, or was it later?
When I saw this earlier, I could almost feel another impression coming on, because it reminds me of the famous quote by Winston Churchill, of course, that he used at after the Battle of Britain, when he said, "This is it's not the end, it's not the beginning of the end, but it is the end of the beginning." And I suppose I thought to myself, yes and no, because it certainly wasn't the, you know, the where it all started. That went a long way back. I mean, the beginning of the end, I suppose you could say the seeds were sowed a long way before that. But in terms of our actual physical demise, yes. I think when we lost at home and then away to Cardiff, who were also pretty poor, obviously, last year, it was really, the writing was on the wall then, wasn't it, I think. It showed how far we'd fallen. And I said at the time, I think they were one of the worst teams I'd seen, Cardiff, and if we can't beat them, that's it. We've had it, basically. And so, yes, in that respect, it was the beginning of the end, or it was probably more than the beginning of the end, wasn't it?
Well, again, it matters how you look at it. If you're talking about this was the, I guess you could say, the moment where it all came together, that this was not going to end well. I've got to be honest with you, that's when it first really hit me. Was that away match at Cardiff. And you know what, like you said, you bring up an excellent point there, David. Losing to Cardiff at home, then losing away, I mean, that tells you all you need to know. Nothing against Cardiff City, but this is a team in years past we would beat. You know, again, at least at home we would beat. And that should have told us way back then that we were in serious trouble. And honestly, I should have seen the writing on the wall. I know when that decay began, David, but we're talking about when it really hit home was this match. So, again, I agree with Paul for bringing this up. He brings up a valuable point here. This is when it really started to fall apart, where I felt, okay, this is not going to end well. It was this loss to Cardiff City. Very good point by him in writing about that. And David, let's move on, because Paul actually had another interesting article today that I actually shared with you on Get West London. He wrote an article regarding Brian Ruiz. Of all people, you know, your favorite person, Brian Ruiz, and that the Fulham manager discussed that he could lose the player in the January transfer window. However, in this quote from the article, Kit Simon shed some light on Ruiz's contract situation, and this is from the article. Kit said, quote, "There's not been an offer as such, but interest, and I expect there to be interest in a lot of our players, because if not, it means we've got a lot of players nobody wants. Brian's situation was made quite definite to me when I first took over, and he is possibly looking to move on. If it came about, we would sit down and discuss it, but he's a player we have an option to add on an extra year in quotations, this is to his contract. If anything happens, we'll work out the best situation for club and player. All right, David. Again, when I saw this, and I saw, you know, again, I shouldn't say quotations, in parentheses, to his contract, I was not aware that Fulham had an option on Brian Ruiz's contract. So what are your thoughts about this?
I honestly actually think I saw something about this before. I did see somewhere on Twitter that someone did mention a possible contract extension, an option, and I thought, oh my God, you know, don't tell me that, please, not now. And you see a lot on Twitter about Brian Ruiz, and you know, we had this discussion earlier offline that, you know, I said at the time, you know, if he was really that great, why on earth didn't someone come in from him in the summer? And you said, well, maybe there were, and I said, well, we don't know, do we? Because as far as we can tell, there wasn't a firm bid for him. And maybe there was some interest. I mean, there was certainly interest according to the papers and what you read on Twitter, but was there actually any firm interest? We don't really know for sure. And whether that was because they just don't rate him or whether because the price that was mentioned was too high. But as I said before, you know, no one took him then after he had, you know, a reasonable World Cup. So now, you know, you get a player who signing a long contract would make a massive difference. But I'm not sure how much it does with Ruiz, really. I don't know how much value it would add. Certainly, you know, if he did stay another year, he's then very close to being 30, I think, if I'm right. And it just doesn't work. For me, it just doesn't work. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it now. You know, I like Brian Ruiz. I really do like Brian Ruiz, but just despite what you think and what other people think, as a person, he's a very nice, a very polite
man. It's not about him as a person. I'm sure he's very nice. I'm talking about as a player for Fulham.
No,
not even a player.
As a player.
You said to me offline, David. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut in. You said offline. You don't mind him as a player. You just don't think he's a good fit for the English game. That's basically it. Am I right?
Yes. I think he's a nice man. I think he is a very technically gifted player. He has got some great skills. He plays football in a nice way, I guess, you know, the way you'd like it to be played, you know, on the ground with culture. But I don't think that he is the right sort of person for Fulham or the English game in general from what I've seen. And the problem we have at Fulham is fitting him in the team. But it's not as cut and dried as you think, because we've had these games where he hasn't played and we've been just as bad. If we'd suddenly changed our whole system and been fantastic without him in the side, it'd be pretty simple. But we haven't. You know, we've failed to score in three games. And, you know, some of this has got to be down to Hugo, obviously, whose teams have gone off the boil. But also LVC, who has been, you know, he didn't play one game. He went off early in Bournemouth, and he went off early last time out. And I think LVC thrives on... Hugo thrives on LVC's service. And no doubt Brian Ruiz as well benefits from LVC's running that will create space for him to do what he does. I think in the ideal world, if we have other people in the team who are creating space and width and running, Brian Ruiz can succeed, as we saw against Bolton. You know, we ran them ragged the last 20 minutes, and Ruiz was controlling it from that point. He actually did quite well there. But week in, week out, playing a tight, narrow diamond, it just doesn't work. He doesn't have the space to do what he needs to do. And I think he is better suited to, you know, the Dutch league. He's proved it, I think. I don't know how his spell was at Eindhoven, but previously at 20, you know, he was a very popular, successful player. You know, and I think for him, he probably does need to make a move, because he may be able to get a perceivably higher standard of football, i.e. playing the top flight in, you know, albeit perhaps not as strong league as the UK, as England, I should say.
Right.
But he'd even get a chance at European football, perhaps. And it's just, I just don't see anyone coming in with a big offer for him. And even if we extend his contract, I'm not sure how much more value that would add. With some people, of course it does. But this is the whole sticking point. And, you know, I know I was being a bit stubborn with you earlier, but we just really don't know. I don't think we know exactly the case. You know, if the club came out and said, right, we have a value of X pounds on Brian Ruiz, and unless someone meets that, he's not going, then we'd at least know where the line in the sand was. Or if they'd, maybe if people were prepared to make offers. But I just don't think we know, and I just don't see there being enough interest. If there's a lots and lots and lots of interest, then you start to have a bit of a captive market, and you can, you know, go to the highest bidder. But if a
right.
couple of clubs are literally interested and that's all you've got, then you're going to end up literally having to take whatever you can get. And at the moment, that's all they can do. If they want to get anything for him, they're going to literally have to take what they can get, because otherwise he'll just walk, I think.
Right. But David, that's the point about having this option. I think that option is a bargaining chip for the club, honestly. Because, again, they don't have to let him go away for nothing. You know, they could take him up on the option. So again, it does give them some room to maneuver with Brian Ruiz, with another team, because they have that option. He is, you know, again, it's up to them. They could let him walk. You're right about that. They could let him walk at the end of the season, but they could also pick up the option. So that's just something that they kind of have in their back pocket. I think that makes this situation a little bit more interesting. And that's why I think Fulham can get something for him because of that option. I know you disagree with me on that, but I think that gives them a little bit of bargaining that they can do with Ruiz, that they could do with other clubs, because he's, you know, again, if Fulham do not want to make him, you know, just a free agent, you know, just to be out for anyone, they could pick up the option and then say, okay, you know, you want the player, you know, you got to give us X amount of pounds. You know, again, I. The fact that they have this option, I think, is a good thing. That was the point of me bringing that up, David. I know how you feel about Ruiz as a person, as a player. I get that. My whole thing was that again, I think Fulham are in a better situation to decide what they want to do than I thought, because I thought he was just going to be a free agent, you know, at the end of the season. I think this helps that situation. I don't know how much money that they can get for him, and David, as is in this article by Paul Warburton, there weren't two teams interested. There were several teams this summer interested in him. Now, the level of interest, that we don't know, David. You're right about that. We don't know exactly how interested, if they made an offer. It's not like Fulham is telling us that. But again, let me do a little digging, and Paul Warburton did a little bit digging. There was interest. We just don't know the level of it. So my point is that I think this option could potentially help with everyone involved. But we'll see what happens. I just found that interesting in the article that it talks about the option for another year with Brian Ruiz. He wouldn't just, if the club decides to, they can actually exercise that option. It's very interesting. All right, my friend, let's move on. And let's talk about something that again, I've seen on Twitter a great deal. I don't know if you've seen all the speculation about Matt Ritchie, but I've seen a good amount of it. This I think is probably the first, you know, first article, or I should say, I might have seen some other articles, but this is the first I've seen from a website like Mail Online, the Daily Mail. Laurie Whitwell with the Daily Mail had this article today entitled "Fulham Weigh Up £3 million Bid for Bournemouth Winger Matt Ritchie as Cottagers Look to Mount Push for the Playoffs." What are your thoughts on this speculation, David? What's interesting about Matt Ritchie is I think he actually would fit a need that Fulham have down the right hand side, the right wing, because again we need a pacey winger. I'm curious your thoughts and if you think that this speculation could go anywhere.
Well, it's quite interesting. There has been quite a lot of talk about it, and if you judge by the amount you see how likely it is, then yes, there is a likelihood. From my point of view, the first question I would probably be asking would be. Would he want to go from a successful team that have a very good chance of reaching the Premiership to a team that's got no chance of reaching the Premiership next season as it stands? So what happens? You know, how do you sell that to a player apart from saying we're going to give you loads of money, which is,
well,
you know,
well,
great,
well that's what was talked about in the article, David. That's actually, it's funny. You just nailed it. Because Fulham could potentially offer more money than Bournemouth can.
And that's a bit sad, really. For me, I, you know, if a player came to us only because the money was better, then, you know, he doesn't have much regard, really, for the club or the history or whatever. However, if it's part of something, a bigger picture, i.e., I suppose you could say, well, look, stay with Bournemouth, have your one season in the Premier League, but you're going to get relegated probably because they haven't got the resources.
Right.
Fulham, we're building something much more long-term here. You know, that's maybe, you know, in a very crude way, how you could sell it, I suppose, isn't it? We are a team that were established in the Premier League, and we proved we were established, and we want to do that again.
Right.
If you stay at Bournemouth, yes, you'll probably get 1 year in the Premier League and get relegated. That's a little bit more. That's a little bit more, I suppose, credible. And,
right.
And, oh, by the way,
we'll
double your money as well. But
right. The combination, David. But, what if it was the combination? And it's funny that you mentioned this because while you were talking about this, I thought of someone like Ross McCormack, and why Ross McCormack made the move. Now, again, obviously. You know, I have a feeling he did pretty well for himself financially, and that was probably a factor, and maybe he also wanted to be in London. I'm not sure. I've never talked to Ross McCormack. I don't know. But money, I wouldn't doubt money was a factor, but something that you just said could also be a factor. How much closer are Fulham to getting back to the Premier League than, say, Leeds, and actually building something and being part of something for the future? You know, and again, that's a very good point by you about Bournemouth. Nothing against Bournemouth. I think Bournemouth have an excellent chance to be promoted. But will they be one and done? And in 5 years' time, will Fulham still be in the, you know, be able to get back to the Premier League and be sustainable like we're talking about? Maybe that's what's going on here. I don't know, but you bring up a good point. Kudos to you for bringing that up, David.
Thanks.
No, because again, that's another angle to this. Because again, it's funny because I've been going back and forth a little bit on Twitter about this, David. That it feels strange to me if, say, Fulham brought in a player like Matt Ritchie, who's with a club at the top of the Championship, and coming to Fulham, it's like it just doesn't feel right. But you know what? Fulham have to bring in the players that they can. It's a business, you know. Again. I just feel it's a strange situation, like you said, David. Why would a player who's with a team, you know, at the top of the division go with a team that's in the middle of the division? And that's what's interesting about all of this. You know, you bring up the reasons what could be the motivation for the move. If you're Matt Ritchie, it'll be interesting to see if this leads to anything. But there's been a lot of smoke. You know, there has been a lot of smoke. But again, will it turn into fire? Only time will tell. All right, David, let's move on. I want to share a story with you. I, you know, again, you and I have talked about this, so you do know about this. I wrote on Cottagers Confidential this week an article entitled, Why Do You Support Fulham? And it's really about me going to a restaurant Sunday night and basically sitting down for dinner, watching the NFL playoffs. Waiter takes my order, David. Waiter goes away. Another waiter comes by, starts shaking his head, and says, why Fulham? And, you know, again, I tried to explain it. He kept shaking his head because I don't understand. I told him about Clint Dempsey, and he's like, he still couldn't understand it. And then he told me he supported Arsenal, and he didn't even know that Arsenal, you know, how Arsenal did that day in the FA Cup. I was the one to tell him. Then we're talking about Arsenal. But what was interesting about this whole thing, talking about this, because I was wearing my Fulham shirt, and he was looking at the back of it because I was going to ask you, who's Goldman that plays for Fulham? And I said, no, that's my name. You know, that's my name. No, no, you know, I don't play for Fulham. I wish I did. But it was just a funny little story that my family thought was pretty funny, that someone would think that I actually played for Fulham. But the whole point of it, David, and I wanted to ask you, you've already told me off air, but have you ever been asked that question, why do you support Fulham?
Now, normally people say to me, are you a lunatic for supporting Fulham? Or I get some sort of derogatory remark, you know, or people, since we've had the Worldstone Raider, I'm sure you know the Worldstone Raider, Russ, yeah?
Yeah.
Every time I, and we're out in the Fulham shirts, we normally get, you know, you got no fans sort of thing, you know, or that kind of remark shouted at you or worse. But, I mean, for your point of view, obviously, the best comeback you could have done, because I know you guys are big on tipping in America, is not to have
right.
left him a tip, because it's kind of mandatory, isn't it, in America, you leave a tip.
But,
I
David,
know,
he wasn't
really...
even my waiter. That's the point of the story. He wasn't my waiter.
oh, you should have done a Yanis special then, taken him outside to the car park and roughed him up a bit.
Okay. First of all, I don't know if Yanis would do that. That's number one. Take that back, David. That was a call for. I know you're trying to be funny, but that was a call for with Yanis.
Yanis wouldn't do that. Yanis has previously said that if anyone disagrees with him, he'll meet them in a dark car park in Toronto didn't he, I think? I'm only quoting Yanis's words. I know.
You're just trying to be funny. I get it. But I hear what you're saying. I just find it interesting because again, the whole kicker to the story is that this wasn't even my waiter. You know, he just kept talking to me. And then, you know, he's like, hey, you should come back and watch some of the matches when they're going on. That would be the Premier League matches because, as you know, David, it's very difficult to see any type of full matches, but they show all the Premier League matches at this place, Buffalo Wild Wings. And it's actually a great place to eat and also watch the NFL games. But I just found it funny that, again, I get asked this question. I know fans get asked this question here. Why Fulham? It wasn't even why do you support Fulham. It's like, why Fulham? And it's my team, and it's not going to change. What surprised this guy, and I'll finish off the story, is that he was surprised that I was still a fan of Fulham, David, after Clint Dempsey left. Now, this is something that I've actually been asked a few times. They were surprised that I would continue to follow the team even when Dempsey left. That would make me not a fan of Fulham. That would make me a fan of Clint Dempsey, not a fan of the club, a supporter of the club. That's what I find interesting. It, you know, again, I get that every once in a while that there are people that are actually surprised that I still support Fulham, and it actually irritates me because I'm a Fulham fan. I'm not, you know, again, I happen to like Clint Dempsey as a player. I'm lucky that he brought me to this club. I feel very fortunate that Clint Dempsey did come to Fulham. But again, I'm a Fulham supporter, and that comes first. But, you know, again, that's why I found this story pretty interesting and just wanted to write about it. And I've had some interesting comments on my story. All right, David, before we have Alex join us, I've got one more question in Cottage Talk Quick Shots to go over with you. On Thursday, Fulham released team news on their website, and in the post it mentioned that both Ryan Tunnicliffe and Alex Kaczyniklic are available for selection for the upcoming match against Cardiff City tomorrow. Also, Fulham manager Kit Simons is quoted and had to say this about LVC. Quote, Lassie Vegan Christensen is a bit of frustration right now. He said, again, it's not too bad. It's very similar to what he did against Bournemouth. It's certainly a less serious one, but we'll make sure we get him right and build them up slowly and make sure he's going to be right to come back in. David, it sounds like, to me, Christensen is a serious doubt for this match against Cardiff City. Would you agree with me?
I would say more than that. I think if Kit risks him tomorrow, he is like, you know, actually, I would be starting the Kit out campaign, I think. We'll start it tomorrow if he risks him and he gets injured, because what happened last week was foolhardy in the FA Cup and reckless. And you could have, like, you know, risked one of our key players being out for a long time if he'd have, you know, damaged it much worse. So I don't think Kit is that stupid to make that mistake again. I don't think anyone would, to be honest with you. I can understand, you know, the reasons for trying to play him if you think he's fit. And if he seems to be fit, putting him in the team because he's a very influential player, but I think he would be mad to put him in tomorrow. I think he's got to rest him because, you know, after all, we've got another match on Tuesday as well, and then of course the home match against Reading the following Saturday, which is also a key match.
Yep.
So I think he's got to leave him out because, you know, even if he seems to be okay, which I don't think he will be, but if he seems to be okay, I think you've got to give him a bit more time. So no, I don't think we'll see LVC tomorrow.
I don't think we are at all, honestly. I totally agree with that. You know, the minute I saw that, okay, he's going to be very careful with this kid, and hopefully we see him soon. But I wouldn't play him tomorrow. I would make sure he's 100% because he's a very valuable player moving forward, and it's not worth the risk to have what just happened in the last match, David. So I'm all with you on that. I totally agree, but I found it interesting that in the team news on the website yesterday that this was mentioned. So again, it just sounds like to me it's going to be highly unlikely that he's involved at all in the match. But we'll see. You never know in these situations. All right, David, it looks like we do have our guest on the line, so I'm going to bring him on. Okay, joining us now is Alex Bywater, who's a writer for Wales Online. Alex is coming on to give us the Cardiff City perspective on the upcoming match. Alex, welcome to Cottage Talk.
Sorry, can you say that again, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I said welcome to Cottage Talk?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, listen, Alex, I really appreciate you coming on. You wrote a really interesting article, which I'm going to be talking to you about in a little bit. But we actually have some breaking news, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this today from Cardiff City. They're going back to blue for the home kit. I want to ask you, how much of an impact do you think this is going to have on the club and also tomorrow? Do you think we're going to see a different type of Cardiff City club, you know, even just because they're going to have the blue home kit going on?
I think it's going to have a massive impact, really. I mean, it's been up and down for the club, on and off the pitch, for about 2 years now. I mean, obviously, the Premier League dream didn't really turn out as fans would have wanted. Since they've come back to the Championship, it's been going badly on and off the field. And I think today's decision to go back to blue will really unite everyone. I mean, the manager Russell Slade, the team, and all the supporters are clearly delighted with the move by owner Vincent Tan. And I think it will be a very different occasion at Cardiff City Stadium tomorrow with the decision that's been made today compared to what it would have been if nothing had happened.
You know, it's just form's luck, you know, that they're now going away to Cardiff. You know, it actually happened with Blackpool, new manager. And every time there's been, there's been a couple of instances where there's had that new manager bounce. And now we have this situation for Fulham. And actually, my first thought was, oh, here we go. And the Fulham supporters are already nervous just because the change of the kit to blue. So it sounds like you understand why they're a little nervous about this match just from this, from this motivation for the team.
I think so. I mean, I think Cardiff will be a totally different proposition tomorrow. I mean, the confidence that they'll get, I think, will be massive. But let's not forget that Cardiff have been very, very poor in the last month or so.
That's true.
Their form on the pitch has been dreadful, really, over the Christmas period. So although they will have this momentum behind them, let's not forget that doesn't change what happens on the pitch. But, of course, I mean, there's talk of, you know, a sellout tomorrow at the match. So that's only going to sort of help improve the team, and I think that will give them the confidence to go on and get the win.
Okay, fantastic. It'll be interesting to talk to you a little bit more about this whole situation, because we're definitely going to be talking about the match in a little bit. But before we do that, you know, I want to talk about your article. It was very interesting that you wrote earlier in the week. It's entitled Cardiff City versus Fulham, Which Club Has Made the Biggest Mess of the Championship Return? Very, very good title there. You have a really good comparison between the clubs. Let's start with a summer transfer window. Share with me your thoughts on who you think did a better job this summer building their club.
Well, I don't think either club really did a good job. Obviously, given where I am, let's start with Cardiff. I think they had a very poor window under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He failed to keep them in the Premier League, stayed in the job. And he got decent money for the likes of Corker, Fraser Campbell, Gary Medel ended up off to Inter Milan. And I think the investment generally was a bit of a shambles. There was far too many players brought in. It basically ended up with a bloated squad, really, and he didn't seem to know who to pick or choose from. There was just too many options available to him. I mean, just plucking some names out of the hat, Adam Lafondra, Makeda, Guerra, Adeyemi, Sean Morrison, Anthony Pilkington, Bruno Manga, they all came in. De Gasperi from Crystal Palace, who's barely featured. So he's been a disastrous signing, really. So I really don't think Cardiff had a good window at all in the summer, which is sort of exemplified by the fact that Russell Slade wants to get rid of a number of those players, preferably in January, or if not, the summer coming up. As for Fulham, I guess, it was all about Ross McCormack for them. It was a real astronomical fee for a Championship club to play that, £11 million from Leeds United. And you'd have to say that with that sort of outlay, I don't think it's paid off given their current league position of 17th. So I think you'd have to split hairs with. I think both have been very, very poor in this season, both on and off the field.
Well, what's interesting about the situation with Fulham, and I appreciate your opinion on this, Alex, is that again, it's reported that it's £11 million, but let's be specific on this. It's up to, meaning that if Fulham did get up to the Premier League, you know, again, I think it could potentially go up to that point, but I truly believe that it's not $11 million. But I hear what you're saying, because that figure has been floated out, but again, I have a feeling that it's much less than that. But again, fine, I understand on that. And also, the one thing that again, you know, we've complained a great deal here about Felix Magath, but Felix Magath has actually bought a few good players, like Tim Hoogland brought in Kostas Stafford. So for all the negativity that we have about Felix Magath, he has brought in some interesting players. But I hear what you're saying, because, again, you know, they are who they are right now.
Yeah,
the table doesn't lie, as David says. You know, we are where we are, and Cardiff are where we are. So it's a good point by you to write this article and talk about the mess, because it does start with a summer transfer window. I do agree with you on that.
Yeah. I mean, no, there's no denying Fulham have some good players in their squad. I mean, there's absolutely no denying that. And McCormack aside, but I think I would argue, and as you've mentioned there, if we're in January now, we're more than halfway through the season, and both teams are, you know, struggling with what they would expect to be doing after coming down from the Premier League. I think both managers, although they've been changed, would readily admit that.
Well, listen, there's no question that it's a disappointment. It has to be for both sides, so I definitely see where you're going on that. Okay. You then went on to talk about the managerial situation with both clubs, and they both have changed managers. Talk about your thoughts on how you feel both sides have done since changing for Fulham, Kit Simons, and I really want to know how Cardiff City have been doing with Russell Slate.
Well, if we look at Cardiff first, then it was the decision to get rid of Solskjaer was, you know, it was a split in the fan base, I think, down here, really. There were some that argued it was too soon, and some had had enough, really. So, I mean, there was potential to say that it was a harsh decision. In the end, Solskjaer walked away, was the official sort of term from the club. So, I guess from their point of view in the club hierarchy, I think Vincent Tannen had enough. And as we know, Vincent Tannen is a strong-willed owner. He gets what he wants at the end of the day. So, he'd clearly identified Russell Slade as his man. There was a brief flirtation with Dundee's Paul Hartley, so that never came off. And while Slade's appointment was protracted, it did have a good initial impact, really. The Bluebirds' home form was very good upon his arrival. They did struggle away, but the home form did seem to make up for that initially. Obviously, since then, things have mellowed out a bit, and they did have a really troublesome period over Christmas, which coincided with more apathy to the club from supporters concerning the rebrand. But with that all sorted today, I think Slade can probably have quite a lot to look forward to now.
Oh, that's great. And, you know, and I can just speak for Fulham. Obviously, their form has improved tremendously under Kit. So again, you know, I don't mind saying this, you know, again, I'd like to see Cardiff do well, and obviously not tomorrow, but, you know, again, I have nothing against Cardiff City, so it's good to see that they're hopefully figuring it out, and hopefully Fulham have figured it out as well. We'll see how far that they can go, Alex. And also in your article, you discuss why you think both have performed so badly. Can you just share that with us?
Well, I think the main issue with Cardiff has been that under Solskjaer, he just had far too many options to choose from. I mean, say it's the embarrassment of riches, really. He didn't seem to know what his best side was. He was constantly rotating, even though his side weren't winning on a regular basis. And that was simply it, in my opinion. He just didn't know which players to pick since Russell Slade's come in. He has been criticised for his penchant for a 4-4-2 formation. People arguing that's, you know, outdated now. But at the very least, you can say about him that he knows his best players, and those that he doesn't want to pick will be out the door. It's as simple as that, and I think that has helped with the run of form that happened upon his success in the Solskjaer. So I think that was the main reason why Cardiff struggled, especially sort of around the October time, you know, September, October, because there was just too many players involved on a regular basis.
Okay, fantastic. All right, let's move on to the match tomorrow, because I definitely want to really focus on the match. And you know, and I was going to ask you players to watch. You know, listen, Kenwyn Jones scored against Fulham in the match at Craven Cottage, so I believe he's a player to watch. Adam Lafondra is a player that I'm familiar with. Federico Maqueda is also a player that I'm familiar with. I don't know how much he's been playing lately with Cardiff City, but a player that I have circled that I think could be a factor in this match is the goalkeeper, David Marshall. Did I nail the players to watch, or is there someone else that Fulham supporters should be looking out for with Cardiff City tomorrow?
Well, if we just talk about a few of the names that you've mentioned there, starting with Federico Maqueda, he's been one of the biggest disappointments for the Bluebirds this season. He's had regular chances to start up front and just hasn't produced, really. In the FA Cup game, against Colchester United, he was very, very poor and was withdrawn in that game, even against a side of lower standard opposition, really. Kenwyn Jones came on in that game and scored almost instantly. So I think Kenwyn will almost definitely start tomorrow, and he'll be one to watch out for. You mentioned David Marshall. He's conceded a lot of goals recently, but then again, he has had a shaky defence in front of him. He remains a brilliant keeper. You know, you only have to look at his performances in the Premier League last season to see that. And rumours this January of Everton sniffing around him for a potential stopgap for the injured Tim Howard only goes to show just what a talent he is, really. If I was going to pick one other player, maybe to watch out for, I think it would probably be Craig Noone. He remains one of the Cardiff midfielders that can take the play to the and his link with Kenwyn Jones crossing balls from wide out could be key and could cause the Fulham defence plenty of problems. Also, I've been impressed in the last couple of games with Tom Adeyemi, who was a summer signing, a young centre midfielder. He has struggled initially in the club, but he scored at Charlton on Boxing Day and had a decent game against Colchester in the Cup. So a couple of promising displays from him. Whether he starts tomorrow remains to be seen, but he'd be another one to watch out for in midfield, I would think.
All right, fantastic for the insight on players to watch tomorrow, Alex. Really appreciate it. Before I hand you over to my co-host, I have one other question, and then I'll ask you a prediction at the very end. But first of all, if you're Kit Simons, what would be your strategy against Cardiff City to get all 3 points tomorrow? Again, just to get in the mind of what to look for, what he needs to do to beat Cardiff City on the road.
Well, if the news that broke today hadn't happened, I would have said that Cardiff would go into the match low on confidence, devoid of any team spirit, and I would say that Fulham really need to attack them from the off and go straight for the jugular. Having said that, with the whole back to blue thing that's happened today, I think it will be a totally different atmosphere at the Cardiff Stadium. It will be a party atmosphere at the City Stadium tomorrow. It's close. Well, it could well be a sellout. The fans will be on fire. There's talk of marches and celebrations and stuff with the back to blue. So what I would say is the stadium will be rocking. So I think Fulham need, if they're going to try and get anything from this game, they need to silence that quite quickly with an early goal, keep possession, and to try and silence the crowd, because it's almost undoubtedly going to be a sort of party atmosphere there. And it will be up to Kit Simons' men to try and silence that early doors, I would suggest.
Okay, so basically, if I'm hearing you correctly, weather the storm, get an early goal, and then basically take the crowd out of it.
Yeah, I think so, because, at the risk of repeating myself, I think it could be one of the best atmospheres at the ground tomorrow in a very long time. It's not been a good atmosphere there for quite a while now. The Colchester game in the Cup was a low point, a 4,400, I think it was, attendance.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, I saw that.
In a 20-plus seater stadium.
Wow.
With an extra stand that was built in the summer. So at the time, and that was only a week ago tonight, that was actually, that showed sort of the disagreement that fans had. Now, with the news that the club are returning to a blue kit with a blue badge, it's totally different, and I think, as I said, it'll be rocking down there, and
Fulham have really got to. An early goal would quieten the crowd, and I think it would bring back a lot of the familiar frailties and lack of confidence that Cardiff have struggled with on the pitch recently. And if they can do that, Fulham, then there's no reason they can get the win. But I think if Cardiff score first, with the atmosphere that's expected, I can only see them going on to win.
Okay, fair enough. Very good insight as we go through this, Alex. I really appreciate it. I'm going to hand you over real quick to my co-host, David Holly. David, do you have a question for Alex?
Well, not really. I think we have covered it there. I think, you know, Alex has nailed it where this is a thing. It's going to be a real party atmosphere. And unless we are the party poopers and we do something quick to silence the crowd, I think it's going to be very difficult for us because we're coming on the back of a bad run where we haven't scored a goal in a few games. And if that, the longer that carries on, I think it's the harder it's going to be for us tomorrow. So, I mean, Cardiff are really like pooped in our parade, so to speak, haven't they? Because, you know, it's a perfect fillip for them to kick start their season, I think. I think it's a, you know, I don't know why it's happened now after everything that happened before, but no, good luck to Cardiff. But I think all I can say, Alex, is we need to try and get some revenge for last season because we were both pretty poor last season, I'm sure you'd agree, but you did the dirty on us twice, so we need to try and start restoring some pride, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think so. I think both teams, I think undoubtedly at the start of the season, would be looking to get back into the Premier League. At the moment, obviously, that looks a long way off for both of them
right.
in the current climate. But I think you're right in saying that this is the moment that could kickstart Cardiff's season. It's been spluttering into life so far in the first half. There's not been any real highlights, and there's undoubtedly been some lowlights both on and off the pitch. So this could be the moment things get going. As you say, both have been poor this season, but we'll see what happens, I guess.
All right, good stuff, David. Good question. All right, Alex, before I let you go, give me a prediction for tomorrow.
I think Cardiff will win tomorrow. It's hard to sort of sum up the way fans have felt towards this, having the red kit and the back to blue campaign. It's been something that's been bubbling for the last, 18 months or so with the discontent. But in the last week or so, we've had a real shift in momentum. Things have moved on incredibly quickly in terms of the move and the sort of U-turn by the club's hierarchy. And I think it's really going to foster a sense of collectiveness, togetherness and unity with everyone in the club. I think that's supporters, players. I think the players have got something especially new to play for now. Not to say that they shouldn't have been playing before, but I think that will really kick them on to the next level. Whether it can sort of paper over a few cracks that they've shown on the pitch in the long run, I'm not so sure. But I think tomorrow, with the strength of backing from the fans, I can only see the Bluebirds winning. And I think Kenwyn Jones will definitely be on the score sheet, maybe in a 3-1 win.
Oh, I don't want to see that, but I hear where you're going on that, Alex. Listen, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it. I contacted you early in the week, and thank you again. You really gave us some wonderful insight, and keep up the great work that you're doing with Wales Online. Just share with us where fans can actually follow you on Twitter.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much. My Twitter name is @_AlexBywater. That's me. So it'd be very kind if any of you guys out there would like to follow me. That'd be fantastic.
Absolutely. And listen, you are a tremendous guest. And like I said, I really appreciate you coming on. Before I let you go, I noticed, are you a marathon runner by any chance?
I'm doing one in March, yeah.
Where are you going?
Barcelona.
Wow, that's fantastic. Okay. I happen to see that, and just so you know where I'm located in the Boston area in the United States, and maybe someday you come over here and run the Boston Marathon. If you're going to run Barcelona, maybe someday you'll come over here.
Yeah, well, maybe one day. We'll see how we get him up.
Well, best of luck, my friend, and hopefully we can get you on maybe next season.
Yeah, lovely. All right, yeah, no problem.
Okay, cheers, Alex.
Okay, thanks so much for your time. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Okay, great. All right, David, that was Alex Bywater joining us for a good 20 minutes on Cottage Talk. I thought he was a very good guest. What are your thoughts about our interview with Alex?
Well, yeah, as I said before, I think he covered it pretty well, and I think it's probably a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it, that you know, the announcement by Cardiff has come at a great time for them and a bad time for us, and it's going to make our life difficult tomorrow. They're all for this party atmosphere. Obviously, you know, an early goal for Fulham would dent that severely. So we really can't allow them to play tomorrow. We have to stop them playing. We have to stop them performing, looking dangerous. And it's going to be a really tough ask for us. It's a tough place to go anyway at the best of times.
Right.
You know, the Cardiff fans are, you know, one of the most sort of kind of, I suppose, vociferous, I would imagine you'd say, really.
Right.
Very, very passionate about their team. A great home support when they get behind the side. So, yeah, really difficult for us. And also what we touched upon, you know, we said this in the summer because we talked about, we did a show, didn't we? We predicted everyone else would finish, I think. And that's probably, we should play that back now and we can all, you know, talk about saying we're wrong. We could probably, a few of us would have egg on our face for some of the placings. I know the season isn't over, but there was a few teams that we probably discounted or whatever. I don't think anyone would have said Bournemouth would be doing so well as that at the moment, would they? Or even Brentford.
No.
But I think I remember saying about Cardiff when we did the show how I thought they might struggle because they lost a few of their really key players, you know, certainly Gary Nadal, or whatever, did a great job there protecting the back four.
Yep.
And also, who else they lost? They lost Much, didn't they, to QPR, wasn't it, I think?
I believe so,
Was it to QPR? Do you know I'm going mad? But
I want to say you're right, David. But listen, no, good stuff. And listen, it's going to be difficult, and you and I will preview the match upcoming. And I'm also going to play Kit's interview that he did yesterday with Sarah as well. But before we do that, real quick, and I know at some point you're going to drop off, but before you do, I want to go into the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. I just have a couple of subjects I want to go over with you because they were Facebook questions that I posed to the Fulham supporters, David. And we'll do this fairly quickly. So let's start here. Do Fulham need a striker in the January transfer window? And if they do, would you buy someone from outside or potential recall striker who's out on loan? Now, before I go to you, David, I want to mention that Ollie Hall on Cottage's Confidential actually asked a question to the Fulham supporters on Cottage's Confidential Facebook page. You know, would you bring back Matt Smith at this point? So, just keep that in mind when you answer this question, David. Do Fulham need a striker?
I'm not convinced. Say we do have Matt Smith we could bring back. We even have Mitroglou we could bring back if we really had to. We have Adam Taggart that we haven't seen. We have Corley. We have
Moussa.
Hugo. Moussa. You know. So in numbers, no. Unless there is someone there who can do something completely different. And, you know, one of the big sort of talking points and maybe criticisms has been that Ross McCormack hasn't been playing far enough forward.
I totally agree with you on that, David. Very good point by you.
To bring another striker in would kind of be tantamount almost to McCormack playing in a withdrawn role more. So I would say no. I would say we've got to work with who we've got, and our issues are probably down to other areas on the pitch we need to address ahead of the striking. We need to get our defence in order. We need to get perhaps a bit of width in the team before striker. So I would say probably no.
Okay, fair enough. All right, I'm going to just read some comments with you, and if you want to drop off, David, and drop back on while I read the comments, that's fine, because there are a decent amount of them. So let's start with Jamie Vade. He said, recall Matt Smith. Ahmed Mohammed, recall Matt Smith, sign a couple of midfielders, creative and attacking preferably. Keith Smith, goal scorers, we seem to have plenty of them on the roster or on loan, that could be recalled. Goal creators, however, we seem to be lacking. Graham Gurr wrote, the more players, the better in any position. Again, this is from the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Chris Cox wrote, recall Matt Smith and a decent midfielder so that Ross could play up front where he belongs. David, you just mentioned that. Just to mention that. Martin Ward, we need to create as well as find someone deadly up front, or shall I say shoot on target helps. I agree with you there. Alex Lowy wrote, while I'm sure Matt Smith would add something, I don't think we're crying out for a striker. Hugo has a good track record of staying fit, and we have Ross in his absence. I don't mind other way. Okay. Stephen O'Keefe says, Matt Smith. Lee Randall, I would recall Matt Smith. And loan out Dembele and Taggart. Very interesting. Reese Curtis, I'd recall Matt Smith, if only for Plan B. Plus, Hugo is underperforming at the moment. The big problem at the moment is McCormick playing playing basically too far back. We paid all that money for goals, not trying to play quarterback. Leon Nebard, yeah. I don't know what it's about that. Lars Anderson, bring back MS. Matt Smith, Simon Rugg, get Mitroglou back. Whoa. We got one person saying bring back Mitroglou. And finally, our friend in New Zealand, Anthea Evans. Matt Smith doing a great at the moment, but no point in recalling him to sit on the bench. Fulham have too many strikers. Hugo, Woodrow, Dembele, Taggart, and McCormick. Recalling Smith and Mitroglou would mean loaning out others. Creative midfield, a bigger issue. Very good stuff by her. David, you still with me?
Yeah, I am, but I will be going shortly unless you want to carry on talking for a minute.
What I'll do is, David, I will mention the second subject, and you drop off and come right back on, my friend.
Okay.
Okay. All right. The other question that I asked the Fulham supporters on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, and again, listen, thank you so much, everyone, for sharing your thoughts on this, because we're definitely getting some good comments, and I appreciate everyone following the liking, I guess you could say, the Cottage Talk Facebook page. So let me open this up. And this Cottage Talk Facebook question, and I'll bring David back on so he's right here with us, was as follows. As I pull that up, okay. How many players do Fulham need to add in the January transfer window? All right, David, what are your thoughts on this? How many players do Fulham need to add? 2, 3, 5, how many?
How long is a bit of string? Definitely another goalkeeper. Still don't want to see pyjamas on the bench. Fullback, I don't know. Grimmer's slowly getting into the role, and we do have Hoogland to come back. So right back, still a little bit of concern, as is left back, I suppose. But Amabieta should be back as well soon. He can play there. So we do have a bit of cover if they stay fit and don't get themselves sent off or anything. The thing is we have so many players.
We do, David.
Is Brian Ruiz going? Will Chris David play there? Will we change systems? What will we do exactly? Is Fofana going to stay? Is he going to go? Again, what happens there? Because as it stands at the moment, we will now have Tunnicliffe and Fofana and LVC and Parker all competing for 30 central midfield players and positions, as well as, of course, Emerson Heineman. We've got Alex back. We've got... Alex and I suppose Kavanagh are competing for the sort of lefty midfield type positions, although Kavanagh also can play at left back. In terms of numbers, we don't really need anyone. In terms of quality, that's where the issue is. Who's going to perform week in, week out? The only position I'd say we absolutely need is the goalkeeper, because if anything happens to Bettinelli, I think we need someone better. And it's very strange that obviously... a goalkeeper we were interested in and we couldn't have because apparently he was covered to Peter Cech, has now gone somewhere else. And they've recalled Jamal Blackman from Middlesbrough. And
right.
I say they because obviously I'm very conscious not doing a Yanis and costing you loads of money. But we could have still had Schwarzer. Had he been our backup, I would have thought that would have been fantastic. I'd have loved to have seen him in the first team. But if he was our reserve goalkeeper... sitting on the bench every week, I would have been very happy with that, and that would have done a good job for now. But it's not to be. So definitely a goalkeeper. And apart from that, I really think we only need someone if we find someone who can actually do a great job, who's going to improve on what we have already.
Right.
Because we have we do have players for most positions, with the exception perhaps of Witts. I mean, right wing, I suppose, is actually a bit of an issue.
See, that's the one that I'm looking at, David.
Yeah, I mean, right. I mean, left wing, we have Alex who can play there. Say, Stafelidis could play there. Kavanagh could play there. And then you have the old sort of hobby horse. They drop out one of the players, like McCormack ends up playing out there. George Williams, of course, as well. I mean, George can play on the right. He's perfectly capable of playing on the right as well. We have Eisfeldt, who could play either, I guess, but he hasn't really established himself, and I don't know whether he needs more time. We have Adil Chihi, obviously, somewhere, but I don't think we'll be seeing too much of him.
I don't think so
yeah,
either.
Maybe right wing, maybe that's why they're looking at Matt Ritchie. But
yeah.
It's hard to know who else who would be there apart from cover, because he's not gonna be resting LVC if he's fit. He's not gonna be resting Parker. He's the captain. McCormack likewise. And you know what I mean? It's who is actually gonna be dropped from the team or rested? No one. I mean, that's the thing. Unless he finds someone who's different, what
right.
will he do? Because I can't see how he would change it. I'm fairly happy with the general squad we have. It's just in depth, I don't know about some of these players, because we have so many people on the periphery and not even involved. You know, we've never seen Dino Fazlić, have we? Apart from Ben Magic.
Should we bring up Mark Fotheringham, David?
Well, we've seen him, haven't we?
We have, but we have, unfortunately. We have.
We see what he can do, and I'm not really counting him, because I would assume he is on his way out. But
right.
Fazlić is also a player in that position, but we haven't seen him at all, not even with any injuries. Tony Clifford obviously play there now in that kind of position as well. And
that's right.
The big question for tomorrow is, you know, who's going to replace LVC? Will it be Tony Cliff? Will it be Kavanagh? Is he going to change the system completely? So now with these guys back, we already have an issue with people like Chris David, who we all think should be getting a chance in the team. He's not even making the bench. And there's this massive clamour to get Pat Roberts playing, and he struggles to get game time. And then, you know, week in, week out, there's people who do feature and then don't feature the next week, for example. You know, sometimes we have Corley and Moose on the bench, and sometimes we don't. And it's quite hard to fit all these people in already. I mean, Thomas Eisfeldt is struggling to make the bench even.
Right.
So you tell me, you know, who do you think, Russ, who's, you know, who from the regular first team could be displaced to replace? I mean, okay, are we going to sign, you know, a top striker and somebody say, Hugo, sorry, you're not wanted anymore?
No.
I don't think that's going to happen. It's not going to happen,
no,
is
if,
it?
No, listen, okay, go ahead, Dave.
No, I mean, that's basically, I mean, the spine of the team and the basic make of the team, I think it literally does pick itself with the exception
right.
of a few people. It's just, unless we find someone who is a significant improvement on anyone else we have, I can't see them really making many changes.
Well, see, that's where I'm going to go with this, with you, and then I'm going to read the comments from the forum supporters about this question. Because I say that if they're going to bring in players, they've already recalled Kaká and Ryan Tunnicliffe. So, in essence, they've already brought in two new players, because that's the way I look at it. I'm saying, if you know, again, and I heard Kit talk about this, and I'm going to play his interview in a little bit. I think you need. I think if you're going to buy players at this point, David, make it an upgrade. Meaning you feel that you have a position that you want to upgrade. And I'm looking at right wing, like you said. Unless they're sold that Ryan Tunnicliffe can do the job, or someone else can do the job, I think that's something that they need to pursue. I think fullback is another position, if they feel that they can upgrade at the position, that they should consider. I agree with you on goalkeeper, except one point, David. Jesse Uronen, don't know the situation with him. So maybe in the short term, if I knew he was going to be fit to play the rest of the season, I would say no. But I think that there's some uncertainty knowing what's going on. We don't know what's going on with Uronen. So I'm going to assume that they potentially need another goalkeeper, and if that's the case, then I agree with you there. Besides goalkeeper, I'm looking at positions where I think maybe you can upgrade. I'm saying, you know, again, Stafelidis has done a nice job, but what if you get a player that, again, is going to be a better solution long-term maybe you consider it. Same thing with right back. But for me, the big one is definitely right wing. And potentially, again, we don't know what's going to happen with Fofana. Maybe you consider someone in central midfield. Again, David, we've been talking about this a great deal. Scott Parker, you know, again, is doing a fantastic job, but does he need help there? So, again, it's, you know, I still see three or four places, you know, again, that they could potentially upgrade and possibly give experienced players behind them in the case of goalkeeper and also in central midfield. But right wing and center backs, right and left backs, I think maybe you can upgrade, David. Those are the positions I'm looking that they could potentially upgrade. But let me do this. Let me read some of the comments from the phone supporters on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, and I'll start with Giannis, our buddy Giannis, our co-host. Hey, Russ, two or three, I believe, with Kaká and Tunnicliffe back, we should be in good shape moving forwards. Okay. Lee Randall, six, two fullbacks, a center back, defensive midfielder, striker, and a right-sided midfielder. Okay. Then Giannis chimes in, David, you're not going to know who this player is, so you're going to have a good chuckle on this. And if people know the New England Patriots, you'll know what I'm talking about here. Better still, sign Gronkowski from the Patriots and convert him to a center back. And Giannis, I totally agree with you. He would be incredible as a center back. And David, if you get a chance, Google Rob Gronkowski, and I think you'll understand what Giannis is talking about. Let's see, Ollie Berry wrote, just think two would do, three out of push. I think a right back is badly needed as Grimmer and Zveretic are finding it tough. Hoogland is great, but his injuries are a concern, and I bring in an out-and-out right winger. We've already been talking about that. Whenever I've watched them on TV streaming or at the Cottage, it's clear as day we lack width, and we've all talked about it, and I think it's how other teams get us. Richie from Bournemouth would be a great signing for that and has been mentioned, but I can't see him swapping a promotion-bound side for us at the minute. If he was going to bring in a third, I'd get a center back maybe just on loan, though. Okay. Patrick Sullivan wrote also, experienced center back, need someone like the good experienced center backs who have helped us before. Melville, Simons, Coleman, Albert, Brown, Locke. Guys who might now struggle in the Premiership but have the leadership we need in the Championship. Ciarán Elster, about 11 might do us. That's pretty funny. Steve Lydiot says 4 or 5, I'm honest, experienced. Center back, full back, can play left and right back, would be a steal. Central midfielder, winger, striker. And Thea Evans wrote, entire squad and manager according to Vince, but he's not a happy bunny at the moment, plus a comment about bringing back Fayed. A more considered view might be goalkeeper backup a must. Defense, okay, but a mature utility defender to cover injuries who can play center, right back, left back, wingers. Recalls should take care of this. Creative midfield. Love Brian. He's as cute, but, again, a mature player who can support Scotty and the youngsters in the squad and allow Ross to go forward. We've all been talking about that. Don't ask me who forwards. Okay. Ben Hardwick, creative midfield, defensive midfielder, center back, right back, and backup goalkeeper. Our co-host, David James Dowden, we need three players. With all having Premier League and Championship experience, three. Ollie Minna said, get Holpe back. David, get Holpe back. I have to ask you about that. And Gail Smith says, zero, laugh out loud. So she obviously thinks that we need to bring players back. All right, David, what stands out from you, from the Fulham supporters, and bring Holpe back. What do you think about that?
Well, I loved having him at the club, although I don't think he performed as well as he could have done. We still had issues with corners not beating the first man and delivery on some free kicks, but you know, he played in that kind of Brian Ruiz role, and he had some of the failings of Brian Ruiz, but he played with a lot more energy and gusto, and I think he showed more passion for the team as a loan player than some of the people who weren't on loan here. But he's gone off, hasn't he, somewhere else now, I believe, so I don't know if that's even viable, but that kind of player, yeah, of course. But that's the sort of thing, you know, basically Chris David and Lewis Holpe are very similar in their kind of styles, I suppose, really.
Right.
Quite tenacious and, you know, quite nippy and left-footed and sort of maybe come in from the right but play in a central cam position, like to take set pieces and stuff and buzz around. So, yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing Lewis Holpe, but that kind of player, of course. But that's what we expect from Chris David, and I'm not sure why he hasn't stepped up and why we haven't even been seeing him. Because
yeah, I don't know, David.
If he really was as good as we hope, he should have been in the squad every week, if not starting, certainly on the bench. But, you know, Pat Roberts has been the one who's been constantly there, you know, waiting for his chance. Otherwise, I don't know. I mean, it's easy. You know, there's been such a knee-jerk reaction about getting Matt Smith back this week because of his four goals against Gillingham. And yes, it is an obvious choice, and he is our player, so I think we do need to give him some time. But it's just, again, where do you fit him in the team? It's another
right.
Brian Ruiz question. You put him in the team, who do you drop? Do you drop Hugo? Do you drop Ross? Do you play Ross back in midfield to accommodate Matt Smith up front? Do you then start playing long ball football? Do you have to kind of change the whole team and play wingers to get crosses in? You know, what? It's a difficult one because it can unsettle. And this is what we had, you know, before. You know, people used to moan about Berbatov as well, that, you know, for him to be in the team, it unsettled it. And Brian Ruiz, it's always the way with certain players, if they have a distinct style about them. So I find it quite hard to know how we do augment our squad without disrupting what they're trying to do. Again, you know, people are talking about how narrow we play, which is true, because the diamond. And the diamond was fantastic. I take it you've watched the whole of 2000, 2001 by now.
I have, and I have to tell you that the diamond formation was, like you said, fantastic.
And, you know, and you, as you'd have seen, Kit Simons, you know, played that in that season as well. And
he did.
It worked for us. But for whatever reason, it's not worked. I mean, that diamond we had, obviously we had Steve Finnan, who was a great right back, but he was great getting forward as well. And he coupled up with, you know, Goldbeck, who did play predominantly on the right of midfield. On the left, we didn't really have as much because we had quite often John Collins as the left central midfielder. He was more of a defensive player, and that was reliant on, I think, Rufus Brevett to get forward. But for some reason, it just worked, and I think it's because of the fact of the movement of the forwards at that point, you know, the individual brilliance of Saha and his movement, and of course Burrow Morty when he played, and Barry Hales were always a handful, and it just worked. But for
yeah.
whatever reason, the diamond hasn't been working for us in that way. And as I said before, Brian Ruiz, I don't think it favours him, the narrow play. I think it favours him to have a more expansive play where other people are dragging people out wide and giving him space.
Right.
So the question is, do we stick with the diamond? Do we go back to like a 4-4-2? Or, you know, and Mike, I know you're listening, or a 4-5-1, which I know you don't like, but that...
No, he doesn't like
that. ...gives you the balance. No, I know, but the thing is, the 4-5-1 is the only compromise where you're going to get both the width and the strength in the middle.
No, I hear you. I hear you.
They're trying to stay strong in the middle, but that means
right.
the price to pay at the moment is that we've got no width. But if you play with a straight 4-4-2, we run the risk of being weak in the middle, or weaker in the middle. Saying that, you'd imagine with Parker and Christensen as your middle two, you'd think we'd be okay because they're both great players. But that also relies on the two people playing wide to put in a shift as well.
Right.
And they haven't quite found that balance yet. Anyway, we tried it at Rotherham, and it was a great, entertaining game. We scored three goals away, but that was without Parker as well. That was with Christensen and Hyman in the middle. But
right.
We were very lightweight in the middle, I would say, that game, and we got run at quite a lot. And so it's finding the right people to play the right system. You know, we could go to playing three at the back, you know, as I've talked about before, as another method. But I don't see him making a major sort of change to the way the team lines up now. I mean, the three at the back allows the full backs to push on, and it still gives you the strength through the middle. And you know, but that's reliant on both full backs being great getting forward.
Right.
So I think Kit's got a lot of difficult decisions and experimentation still to come, because we seem to have stumbled upon a system that worked for us when he first took over, but the honeymoon is over now, and the narrow system is not working, and we've been found out, I think, to be honest with you. Teams realise that if they pack the middle, we can't get through, and you know, we've been failing to get, you know, significant numbers of shots on target. because teams know perhaps they can put be strong in the middle and down the wings, they're going to have a run at us. And that certainly worked for teams like Bournemouth and Brentford, I think.
Right.
So I think we do need to find, you know, a way to play with more width, but to keep our strength through the middle. And no doubt, you know, that the two people that have come back, Alex and Ryan, are both a part of that plan, you would imagine, that Alex is a natural left-sided player, although he could arguably play at the top of the diamond as well. He has also played on the right, but I didn't like to see him there.
Right.
Ryan Tunnicliffe, anywhere across the middle, or on the right perhaps again. You know, you could throw them both in, Alex and Ryan tomorrow, and play, you know, with a 4-4-2 type scenario. But I don't know if he's going to be quite so bold as that. But it's a very difficult one. There's no right answer. I'm struggling to know exactly who we should be playing where to try and make things work, because something does need to change as it stands.
No, listen, it does, David. It's an interesting quandary. When I watched back the match and I saw this, and you know, again, you were there, and you know how it looked. You know, it's funny because, again, I go back to we're creating opportunities, and honestly, we don't have time to play kids' interview because we really need to go through our own preview and get this thing moving. But before we do, I want to mention this. I don't know, you know, again, I don't know if Kidd has the players he wants yet for how he wants to play, David, if that makes sense. I think he's doing the best with what he has, like you said. He has players to play the diamond, but it's difficult for him to play 4-4-2 because, again, he doesn't have the wing play that he needs. Maybe that was the idea of bringing Kaká back. Maybe also Ryan Tunnicliffe. I don't know. I think it gives him more options. But I keep going back. I want to have a Fulham team that can play multiple formations, can play different ways. And I think that's what we're struggling with right now. Like you said, when you play the diamond formation, teams know how to play against us now. Now we're stuck. So now you have to find a new way. And that's what I think is going on here. That's why I think Kit needs to bring in a few players to upgrade some positions, and that can give us a way to play a new way. That's why I keep focusing on the right wing, because I think that's what is missing. But again, it might be Ryan Tunnicliffe. I don't know, but you know who's already with us. But again, I want Kit to have options to play the way he wants to play on any given Saturday, because right now it seems like we're limited, David, to how we can play. And when he changes the formation, you know, you brought up Rotherham, it could be a little dangerous at times. So I just, you know, again, I know we need players, but it has to be the right players. And for me, it has to be a way to help us play differently or be an upgrade or both, if that makes any sense, my friend.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, good stuff. Let's get into this preview. And again, I'm sorry that I can't play Kit's interview. We're just running short of time. So let's start here, David. We've already been talking earlier with Alex Bywater about Cardiff City. I just want to get your thoughts on them.
Well, you know, I touched on it before. I thought they may struggle this year because they lost a couple of really good players in the summer. And I think the division, there's been a few surprises. I think we knew Derby would be up there or thereabouts. But I don't think no one predicted Bournemouth and Brentford, and also, you know, Forest, were promising, and they fell away of late as well. So I suppose, you know, there is still potential for a surprise or two at the top there. But Cardiff, you know, they're backed by a rich owner as well. They have similarities to ourselves. They're just out of the Premier League. They have the parachute payment also. They have the vociferous support at home especially. They now have this benefit of the kit change, which is favoured, obviously, by the majority of them. So this is really this is their big chance tomorrow to kickstart their season into shape. But I don't know where it will take them. But I think they're going to be really up for it tomorrow. They have a great goalkeeper as well. If you remember, they didn't manage to get rid of him, thankfully for them. So I don't think it's going to be very easy anyway to go there. But I think it's going to be much more difficult tomorrow now, and especially, you know, with Christensen likely to be out, I think it's going to be a tough one for us tomorrow.
You know what, David? I totally agree with you. I, one of the reasons why I wanted to have Alex on was to really get an idea of what's going on there. And the minute I saw the news about the change to blue again. I was like, oh, it just so happens to be when we're playing them, you know, another match where the other team has this emotional, you know, uplift, you know, and that's what this is going to be, a change of manager, this kid situation. You know, Matt Smith, not the Matt Smith that plays for Fulham, but the Matt Smith from South Carolina, he messaged me right away. He's concerned about that too, and I see why, because again, the game can be about emotion. You know, again, if you're feeding off the emotion at the stadium, I mean, that's going to help you. You know, it's going to be a little bit of an uphill struggle, but if they got an early goal, David, I think so much can change. Just like Alex said, it's about getting that opening goal. If Fulham get the opening goal, they might be able to steal something here, because it's going to be difficult. Because this team, even though they have all this going for them, if you kick them in the teeth with a goal early, you might really get them going in the other direction very quickly. So I think an early goal is going to be huge in this match. All right, David, always like to ask you about the referee. So share me your thoughts on the referee.
Well, the ref is even older than you are, Russ, tomorrow.
I know you already told me that. But you know what, David? We're the same age, so.
Well, actually, I'm a bit older than you, so I know. But I was actually surprised when I read it. It said born 1960. I thought, is that right? I had to check this one up. But yeah, Nigel Miller, he's all the way from County Durham, so he's got a very long journey tomorrow. So I hope he's not in a bad mood when he gets there. long way down from the northeast. But he's actually very well regarded from what I can find out. Obviously, I suppose any ref that's still refereeing at a top flight, more or less, or second tier at 55 almost, is you've got to have something about him. Otherwise, you'd have thought they would have got rid of him. So let's hope that continues. No, nothing really about him, but there was nothing on the boards of any controversy that I could find.
Okay.
He's generally quite well regarded. And people seem to be quite pleased that he's continued on into his 50s.
Okay, very good, very good. So there's really nothing to really add about him, but there's no negativity, which is a good thing. So that's a good sign for this match, because I just want, you know, again, all I care about in a ref is that he plays it both ways and that he's fair, and see how things fall as they may. All right, David, I've already mentioned what I think Fulham need to do to win that match, and that's score the early goal and basically, you know, again, you know, weather the storm early. This is what I said to Alex, and get that early goal and play from ahead. I think that's the only way they get all 3 points or get something from this match. To you, what do Fulham need to do to win this match?
They need to steal their blue kit, I think, is probably the best thing to do. stop them playing in blue. Try not to wear blue as well. So to confuse everyone, it's going to be difficult. And I think the only way to win this game probably is to start very well and to get an early goal, get the noses in front, even two early goals. Because I think it's just going to be a very tough situation, and we need to take the wind out of their sails very, very quickly and very early on. Well, we need to frustrate them anyway. I mean, okay, if we can keep it tight, that helps. But we don't seem to be very good keeping it tight to half time. We seem to like the wheels fall off sometimes second half. The opposition team talk seems to be better than our team talks at half time for some reason. So I think we need to really get a goal or two in the first half early on and try and weather the storm if there is one.
Okay. Good stuff there, David. All right, right back to you. We're just going to jump ahead, David, just for time's sake. So I want to get your starting 11 and what formation you would use, not what formation you think Kit's going to use. I want to know how you would set up Fulham tomorrow.
Oh, this is really hard. This is hard.
It is hard.
In terms of starting 11, I think the back five would stay as they are. I would see, you know, I would imagine it's going to be Bettinelli, Grimmer, Hutchinson, Bodiroff, and Stafflidis. Midfield, I think we're going to see, obviously, Parker, Fofana. I think we're going to see Sean Kavanagh starting, because just on the basis that when he came on last week, he actually did do a good job.
And
because he was the replacement in this case for LBC.
For Christensen. Yeah.
The big, the big question is that going to be a middle three, or is there going to be a fourth one? Are we going to see Tunnicliffe perhaps as a right midfielder to keep Fofana and Parker in the middle and Cavanaugh on the left? Now, that, I think I would probably be minded to go down that route. But the big question is, obviously, and it's our old friend again, is he going to be bringing Brian Ruiz back? Or is he not going to be bringing Brian Ruiz back? And I think it all hinges on that. I think it will be those three, and it will be either Tunnicliffe or Ruiz, McCormack. And for me, I would be very, very tempted to give Hugo a rest and to start with Cawley.
Okay.
But as for Kit, I don't know. It's going to be Cawley or McCormack, Ruiz or Tunnicliffe. I think Kakalicic will be on the bench only. I think Kavanagh will definitely start. And it's just whether it's the three in midfield and Ruiz, or whether it's a 4-4-2
right.
With McCormack and one other up front.
No, very good take there, David. And what's interesting, I've seen many fans talk about that they think they're going to see Ryan Tunnicliffe tomorrow, and I wouldn't be against that. You know, again, it all goes back to what you said, David. Does he play Brian Ruiz? And we've all talked about this, and Brian Ruiz has his good moments. But on the road, I would not play him tomorrow. That's just me. I would go with what you said. I would have Kavanaugh on one side, David, Tunnicliffe on the other, Parker and Fofana in the middle. And I would actually go with Hugo. I know what you're saying. Maybe he needs a rest. But I would go with Hugo and McCormack and keep the back five just like you said. But that's what I would do. I would actually go with that and make it a real, I guess you could say, 4-4-2. You know, see how that looks. See how that goes. But again, I don't know if that's what he's going to do. I have a feeling Kit will play Brian Ruiz. I'm thinking that maybe this is a game that you don't play Brian Ruiz, but we'll see what Kit ultimately does, David. All right, but good stuff from you. All right, let's go through a couple predictions. Andrew Towner has on the Cutters Talk Twitter page, I'm going 2-2, so he's going 2-2, David. Let's see, Simon Patey, he's going 2-2 as well. Interesting. So we got a couple of 2-2s, David. Let's see, Marco Gornick, I have a sneaky feeling we'll win this 1-1-0. Interesting. Okay, let's go over to the Cottage Talk Facebook page because there are a few there. Our friend Yavor Alexiev, he has 2-2 draw. Giannis chimes in. Russ, this has draw written all over it. I say 1-1. Matt Smith, the Matt Smith from South Carolina. Typically, I would say this looks like a draw, but I truly think Cardiff bringing back the blue kits is going to make the atmosphere a tough one, just like we've been talking about. May seem minuscule, but I think it'll make a difference. 2-1 at Cardiff. I hope I'm wrong. Tamara Rahman, want to see us score again, but can't see it against Cardiff. He's going for 1-0 to Cardiff City. All right, David, time for your prediction.
Well, I hope I'm wrong as well, and I will come on and say I was wrong, but I see something like 2-0 to Cardiff for us, I'm afraid. I don't have confidence that Kit will yet find the right system. I share your views that he may go with Brian Ruiz and it may be a disaster away from home. We're on this bad scoring run, and I'm not sure without LVC's energy if we're going to get back onto it yet. So I fear that we won't score, and then, you know, it'll be one of those games like the Middlesbrough game, perhaps not necessarily in terms of balance of play, but one where we're behind and then we chase and we give another one away. Please, I hope I'm wrong.
Okay. Listen, I hope you're wrong. I hope I'm wrong, David. This is going to surprise you. I'm going to pick Cardiff City in this match, and I'm going down a similar wavelength that you did. Alex, our guest, actually predicted 3-1. I'm going to go down the same road. I'm going to say that it's going to be 2-1, and like Middlesbrough, there's going to be a late goal or what has happened to us lately when they're trying to catch up, trying to push everything forward. They're going to give up another goal very late, say in the 90th minute, and it'll look better than it really was. I'm going to say they're going to lose 3-1, but I'm going to say that they're going to give it a go. I just don't think it's going to be enough, and that they're going to score a late goal, making it look worse than I really think it's going to be. I think it's going to be close, but I have a final score of 3-1 to Cardiff City. And, David, I hope I'm wrong. We're both picking Fulham to lose by 2. So, that, you know, again, it kind of makes sense. You know, again, if I got to be honest with you. If they did not have this blue kit situation, I might not have picked them to win. But they do. I think that's huge in this match. I hate to say it because, you know, again, it's a game of emotion. That place is going to be rocking, and I'm just concerned that if we don't score that early goal, like you said, David, we're going to be in trouble. So, I'm trying to be sensible here, even though I like to always pick Fulham to win. I can't pick Fulham to win just because of the situation. So I'm going to go 3-1. All right, David. A couple of other items before we go. We will have a show on Sunday. And what's interesting about Sunday, David, I'll just share with this real quick. Sunday is my daughter's birthday. She's going to be turning 11. And Samantha has really become a really huge Fulham supporter. She has a shirt that she wears proudly to school, and she wore it at camp a great deal. So I want to wish my daughter, even though I'm going to be doing the show on Sunday as well, but I want to wish her right now a very happy birthday. I can't believe it's been this long, but again, she's going to be 11 on Sunday, and can't wait to her birthday. So, and she's a huge Fulham supporter. So, happy birthday, Samantha. All right, David. Any final words before we go, my friend?
Let's hope I'm wrong. That's all I have to say, really.
I always hope you're wrong.
You want me to be wrong, Russ, don't you? You want me to be wrong.
In this case, David, I think we're both in agreement. I want you and me both to be wrong. How about that?
Certainly. Let's see. This is a interesting test because Kit needs to do something now. The honeymoon is over. There's
right.
even people, you know, I wouldn't say there's been people calling for him to go, but there's been that kind of discontent murmuring around that actually it's the kind of I told you so's are out now. And I mean, and I was a bit of one of those, I have to admit. You know, I told you so that maybe he wasn't the man for the job, that he's steadied the ship, but he doesn't know how to take us forward. That kind of, you know, there's that feeling around among some. And it's only a minority, I think, at the moment. But
right.
He needs now to kind of put his stamp on it. He needs to use the transfer window in case, you know, if there is anything he can do to augment the squad. He needs to get the right balance. And, you know, after transfer window, or if we know who's going, you know, if Ruiz is going, if Fofana isn't staying, whatever, he needs to find the post-transfer window ideal starting 11 or formation or both. And it needs to be adapted week by week, perhaps, but in the main, there'll be a hard core to it. Because at the moment, it just hasn't worked. Without Ruiz, without LVC firing, without Rodriguez firing, it just hasn't been working the last few games. So
this is
Kit's biggest test now. You know, it is a real big test, because if he can't get over this, then he probably isn't the man for the job, we have to say, because we need to be moving forward from where we are now. And that's harsh words, and I'm not saying he should go.
I know, David.
He can do that, but, you know, if he can't get us past this point now where, you know, we're stuck with the kind of same predictable lineup every week and a situation where we're failing to break sides down at this level, then, you know, I think it's pretty obvious, isn't it, where, you know, what the future holds for Kit and what the future holds for Fulham.
Well, see, here's my comment to everything you just said. And I understand where you're coming from. I understand where some fans are coming from. This isn't his team yet. I think he deserves to have his team. He doesn't have his team, David. I think you'll agree with me on that. He should be judged when he has his team. He doesn't have his team. He'll have the opportunity to add and start to make his team in January. But ultimately, I don't think he has his team until the summer. That's where I'm going on this. Also, I do believe in giving a manager a chance to grow into the job. I think he deserves that opportunity, David. So for the people that are questioning him now, I do understand it. But here's my thinking on that. You know, haven't you ever had a job where you learn from your mistakes and you've done better? I'm sure everyone has, you know, been able to learn from their mistakes. Give the gentleman a chance to learn from his mistakes and grow as a manager. That's all I'm saying. Give him time, and we will know when the time is right, if he hasn't. Hopefully he will grow into the job and become the manager that ultimately we hope he will be. So that's the way I look at it. You know, again, I'm a glass-half-full guy. I have faith that he will grow into the job. I just want to give him a chance But I'll be the first to say when I think it's time for him to go. I did say it was time for McGough to go, and I would say the same about Kidd. I'm nowhere near that because I don't think Kidd has had enough time yet, David. And I know that there are people. I know there's pressure on him. I get that, but he deserves a chance to build his team, and he hasn't had that opportunity yet. So until he does. And continues to learn from his mistakes. He's already learned to make a few adjustments during the game. Let's see him grow as a manager. You know, I think everyone's so quick to change managers, they don't give a gentleman a chance to basically get better. Give him a chance to get better. That's my only point on Kidd Simons. All right, David, let's wrap up this show. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download College Talk on iTunes and the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also want to mention, you can now listen to the College Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. I listen back to the show on the College Talk TuneIn app. It sounds fantastic. David, you can listen to 200 episodes on the TuneIn app. It's crazy. You can go way back if you want. All right, David.
I was practicing my Russ Goldman accent listening to them all.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, David, listen, great show as always, my friend.
No, I wasn't really. I didn't really, Russ. I was just saying.
Okay. Okay.
No,
okay.
It was a great show.
Okay. Okay. Okay, David.
And,
awkward ending to the show. That's fine. Well, that's it for this episode of College Talk.
For
David Hawley,
time,
I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to College Talk.
Thanks, guys. See you. Bye-bye.
Cheers, David.
Boys and girls.